to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about dog behavior today and taking a look at some ways maybe to change it. Larry Mueller here. Great to have with me today. Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist. She is an international speaker, author, co-hosted Calling All Pets with me for 14 years. And it's really great to see her again. We don't get together very often, and so it's nice to have her here in the studio to talk about things. And we're going to zero in a little bit on the holidays and the problems that could come up with your dog during the holiday season with all the people and all the food and everything. And Patricia, welcome.
Oh, it's fun to be here.
Great to have you with us today. What are some of the problems dogs and dog owners experience during the holidays?
Oh, my goodness. How long do we have? So one is when you leave. Say you're going to fly to Connecticut or wherever. You're going to drive to Minnesota and see relatives. What do you do with your dog? So that's a really big question for a lot of people. Yep. And this is a great time to think about. Say you're going to go away for Thanksgiving or Christmas, and you decide to put your dog in a boarding kennel. We can talk later about some things you can do to help make that process go a little more smoothly. And you also want to think about if you're going to say you're going to have guests, say you're the one. Who guests are coming to. So now is a good time to be thinking about, so how am I going to handle the dog and the guest, or the cats and the guest, the birds and the guest? So we can get into that in detail, too. A lot of things to think about.
I've got two cats to think about, Tiger and Coco, and one of them runs away, and you don't see him while the guests are there, and the other one is walking underneath the feet of especially the people who
are allergic.
Yeah, or don't like cats for some reason.
There's actually, believe it or not, there might be a good explanation for that. Cats, if you watch cats meet or greet in the wild, especially if they don't know each other, they put a lot of energy into not looking at each other. So there are actually videos that are hysterical to watch. Two cats that are like 50 yards apart or 50 feet apart. And one will look to the right and the other will look to its right. So, they're not looking at each other. And then one of them will sort of scan across the environment and they'll just briefly lock eyes for a microsecond and then they both look the other way. And they're basically like, I'm not looking at you. I am not looking at you. And so people who don't like cats
don't look at cats.
And people who love cats are like, oh, wow, look at the cat. And they reach and they loom and they grab. And the cat is like, what's wrong with this person? Don't they know anything about proper cat greeting behavior?
I have learned something today already, and you've only been here with me a minute.
Well, I'm done now because I have nothing else interesting to say. You've tapped my brain, Mueller.
Not true at all. Julie from Belleville has something that goes right along with, I think, what we started talking about here. So let's go there. Julie, hi.
Hi, you guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And welcome back, Dr. McConnell.
Thank you.
Had your puppy primer book out on a kitchen table this morning, reading it while I was eating breakfast in bed.
I love it.
Because we're getting a puppy, over Thanksgiving, either the weekend before Thanksgiving or the weekend after, a little lab puppy. And we haven't had a puppy since our last dog was 13, so it's been a long time. And we're also hosting Thanksgiving, and we're also having a couple people staying with us. Some of them will go home, but some of them are going to stay with us for a few days. So I just wonder what your take, and then I know socialization is so important, and should we try to get the weekend before, or should we wait till after?
Oh, I'm so glad you're asking, and sometimes people ask me questions that are difficult to answer, and I so appreciate you starting off with a really easy answer question, and the answer is wait.
Wait.
Okay. Getting a puppy, especially when you haven't had one in a long time, even for me, it's a thing.
Yeah, it's a
it's
some work,
a big deal. And you're bringing this new family member, this individual sentient creature with its own background and genetics and personality and brain, into your life. And even I find it stressful. And, you know, stress isn't bad, right? Stress is change from homeostasis. So stress is putting sort of off your middle balance point. So it's exciting and it's wonderful. But it is a little like, ooh, does he mean he needs to go out? You know, should I put him here? What should I do that? So I would, it takes energy to do it.
Uh-huh.
So I would save your energy. I would also not worry about socialization until you've had a couple of days to let the puppy get his paws on the ground, because remember, he's in shock. So, I mean, this puppy was born somewhere, and he got taken out of there, away from his siblings, away from his mother, and taken to a completely new place, and he's literally in shock. So the first couple of days should be relatively quiet.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Does and my it? Husband's going to be delighted with your answer.
Well, yeah.
Good. I'm glad to make everybody happy.
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you so much.
Good
Thanks so much for calling. And otherwise, you know, you're ready to baste the turkey, but you've got to take the puppy outside and all that business.
I take new dogs, not necessarily puppies, but any new dog that comes into my house and is going to stay there for longer than an hour, I take out every 10 minutes. Literally the first half a day. And if it's a puppy, it might be every 15 minutes for 3 days until I get a better sense of their schedule. So that's just right there. Right? No turkey basting for you, right? Yeah.
There we go. Well, Cheryl in Brookfield, she has something a little different. Let's go there. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi. Thank you for this program. I've been missing calling all pets for years. I have a behavioral question regarding one of my three cats.
Okay.
And this is what she does. Every single night, and it is every night, she goes downstairs. She waits till everyone is in bed and the house is dark. And we have a laundry chute. And she goes to the basement and brings up socks during the night. Not only that, she howls.
It is
almost like she's in pain. Either that, or like she's mating. It is unbelievable. And we wake up in the morning and we see a trail of socks from the basement steps through the kitchen, through different hallways, and she never ever brings the sock up to us in bed like it's a gift or anything like that. But she does it every night.
Wow.
Every night.
And
wow.
You're sure it's not your husband?
No.
Yowling away. Ooh, that's okay. A scary thought. Wow, this is one of those questions where the expert says, "What a great question," meaning they're like busy working their brain trying to figure out a good answer, because this is a new one. But so here's the fun part. So follow my brain as it chugs along here. So what could explain it? I mean, let's look at the behavioral categories that could explain it. It could be play. I don't think so, and I'll say why in a minute. It could be predation. And I don't think so, and I'll say why in a minute. And it could have something to do with social relationships, either mating or maternal behavior.
Okay.
That's where I'm going with that, because cats don't yowl when they're being playful. And most of play for cats is a kind of a slightly modified, sometimes not very modified, predatory behavior, right? Mm-hmm. So I mean, when cats are being predatory, they are usually very quiet. So I don't think that's it. And also, you know, often when cats will bring an object as if they were bringing you a dead mouse or something, they'll bring it all the way to you. So I think the best explanation focuses on the yowling, because the yowling is what you hear. You are right that you hear it when cats are mating, when a cat is coming into season. It's possible also that it's maternal behavior, that she's bringing, you know, cats do this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Spayed cats and unspayed cats will focus on a kitten substitute
and
move it around, lick it, carry it around, try and move it from one place to another, which is something to do with kittens, right? So they'll take a kitten from one place and move it to another. And so That's not a bad explanation.
That sounds pretty logical to me.
It's our best guess so far, basically. Now, are we good with it? Don't ask me what to do about it. You could ask me what to do about it.
Hide the socks.
I would. Yeah, that's probably not going to work because she'll probably find something else. I am really curious about this, and I don't know how far you want to go. I'm just wondering if there's some kind of a very minor hormonal imbalance.
Oh.
And that would be something that, you know, your basic veterinary care is not going to be able to address. And I don't know, you know, do you want to spend $1,500 at a vet school finding out if she's slightly off? I would talk to your vet just to ask, what kind of test could you do that would sort of see, you know, what her hormonal balance is like? Because that's one possible trigger that would be causing this.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
7 years old.
Seven?
About seven,
okay.
I think.
Yeah. And how old was she when she was spayed, or is she spayed?
We got her from the Humane Society. She was very, very tiny. I mean, probably weeks old.
Okay.
You know, very, very sweet cat. And this isn't like a behavior that bothers our family.
Okay,
it's
good.
Just so odd.
It's just weird.
Just odd.
That's my best explanation. You might want to try some little stuffed kitty-like animals and just see if she's interested in those, too.
Yeah.
She might be fixated on socks.
Yeah, maybe. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Patricia McConnell, our guest today, as we talk about, we started on celebrating the holidays with your dog or your cat, but obviously, we're on to other things as well, so I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. I had a situation visiting some friends when Emily was young, pretty, you know, and they had a big lab. And the first thing when we walked in the house, the lab came right over and knocked Emily over.
Mm.
And I wonder, how do you keep dogs from jumping on guests?
You know, a friend and neighbor has a dog a very large dog, who does that. And partly because the dog had a lot of surgeries when she was young. So sort of, you know, complicated early training. But, you know, this is a big issue. Just, you know, sometimes if it's a little dog, nobody cares. If it's a medium-sized dog, nobody cares unless their paws are muddy. When they get bigger and they knock your daughter over, right? It's not so good. So there are a couple things you can do, and I actually just got my friend started on this. And this is, if you're going to have company for the holidays, and you have a jumper and a leaper, you've got plenty of time. Christmas. Thanksgiving's a little tough.
Yeah.
And so basically, first of all, I'll just go over it very, very briefly, just the chapter titles. But first of all, you start asking your dog to sit all kinds of places, especially at the door. So go out, take some treats with you, really good treats that are healthy, but your dog adores.
Mm-hmm.
It's really fun to do tests, by the way. Do you want this or do you want that? The dog is like, I love research. Let's keep doing this. So you take your dog's favorite good treats, little tiny bits of them. You go outside the door. You ring the doorbell. You knock on the door. And then you come in and you ask your dog to sit. And when your dog sits, you give it a treat. If it jumps or doesn't sit, no harm, no foul. You just shut the door. You don't go in. You don't greet the dog. So the dog is learning a contingency. If I jump up, I don't get to say hi to anybody. If I sit down, I get to say hi.
And I get a treat.
And that's even better. And now what's most likely with most dogs is you'll get them to sit, you'll give them a treat, and then they'll jump up again. Right? So you have to be really thoughtful about this. So you go outside the door or you turn your back. And then initially ask for the sit. But what you're looking for is for the dog to make the decision on its own. So what you're looking for is a dog, you do it over and over several times, and the dog learns the pattern, and then you sort of turn back around, say it jumped up, so you faced away, you turn back around, and you look at your dog, and she goes, you can just see them thinking, they're like, oh yeah, if I sit, I can train her to give me a treat. And the second they do it without you asking for it, you give them a jackpot, one treat after another. Treat, treat, treat. Not a big one handful, but treat, 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 treat. So you start that, and then you get your friends to help you. So your friend comes to the door, and they know they're helping to train your dog. So you do that as often as you can, and here's what makes it really work. You also trained your dog to go into another room or a crate when people come to the door when you ask them to. And so that is the primary thing that I actually do at the farmhouse. Somebody comes to the door, the border collies are crazed with excitement, and I say, crate up, and they know that they're going to get something great, so they run into the study, they run into their crates, I give them a treat, or not, might not have one on me, right? I shut the crate, I let my visitors in, and we say hi, and then a little time goes by, and then I let the dogs out, and by then the dogs are calmer. So there's nothing wrong with management.
Is it okay, you mentioned crate, is it okay to have a safe area for your dog that isn't a crate when there are people there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I can just put the dogs in the study and shut the door. So if you have a puppy, you might not want to do that because maybe the puppy's going to chew on what's in the waste paper basket and your aunt's best sweater. So that depends on the dog. But I think it's great to teach dogs. There's a great place for you to go. It's like asking your kids, Emily, would you run into your bedroom for a little bit?
Yeah.
You know, Grandma and I need to talk right now. I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a place where dogs understand that they're not in trouble, you're not mad. This is just their place. So you go to your place for a while, hang out, cool. You know, it's the equivalent of giving a kid a video game or a TV. We're busy in here, you're busy in there, you know, and we'll see you later.
Crate training, I have a friend whose dog is, I mean, she just says, crate.
Oh, yeah.
And the dog races to the crate.
It's not hard. Do you want me to describe how to treat a dog? Because it actually also relates to leaving a dog at a boarding kennel.
Oh.
So I'm gonna wrap these things together. So basically, for both circumstances, you're going to take your dog somewhere and then you're going to leave them. And in both circumstances, say it's a young puppy at a crate or an older dog or a puppy you're taking to a boarding kennel, how do they know what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
They don't, right? I mean, at a boarding kennel, you go to a new place they've never been, you walk away. What are they to think? So it's very common for them to be distressed and anxious and worried and bark and howl or chew or whatever. So here's what you do. You're going to condition them step by step that two things happen. When they go to the kennel or into the crate, they're going to get something wonderful, and then you're going to come right back. So the crate version is, and I actually talk about this on my blog, The Other End of the Leash, just posted it yesterday. So the crate, I'll do the boarding kennel version. So the boarding kennel version is a week before you leave, you drive to the boarding kennel. They know you're coming, so they have time to help you. You're going to take your dog into the place where it's going to live while you're gone. Mm-hmm. And you're going to take something that smells like you, like a towel, a carpet, your sweatshirt, your T-shirt. You're going to take that in. You're going to put it down in the kennel. You're going to give your dog the best chew toy in the world. And then you're going to say, bye-bye, I'll see you later. And then you leave the dog and you walk out and you're out of sight for literally 1 second. I'm not kidding. You turn around, you go back, you take the chew toy away. So the dog is like, wait, I'm still chewing. Maybe, maybe not. And then you let the dog out. Wait 5 minutes, repeat, but this time be out of sight for maybe 20 seconds. And then do it a third time if you can. Be out of sight for 3 or 4 minutes. Hopefully your dog is still chewing. And then you come back and you take the dog away. You've taught your dog, when you leave me here, you come back.
Yeah.
So your dog has learned, whether consciously or not, your dog has learned that if you leave, you're going to come back.
Come back.
Just like they learn when you leave the house, you're going to come back. So crate training is very similar. I toss treats into a crate, let the puppy go into it itself, all by itself, or, you know, an adult dog you just rescued or adopted from the Humane Society. You toss treats in, the dog goes in and out, so he's going in and out freely. Then you toss in treats, you shut the door for 1 second, toss another treat in, open the door, let him out again, and then gradually you shut the door, you leave him in with something really wonderful and chewy, you leave the room, you come back, let him out. So basically, if you just think about it, it's really logical, right? You're teaching your dog that when you go in here, I will be coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patricia.
Easy peasy.
It's easy peasy when you have Patricia McConnell giving the advice. I'm Larry Mueller. Louisa DeVogel, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we talk about celebrating the holidays with your dog and cat or other kinds of behavior issues with our guest, Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist. She has a great blog, by the way. She mentioned it a few minutes ago, called The Other End of the Leash. And, of course, many, many books. For the Love of a Dog, The Education of Will, a mutual memoir of a woman and her dog is her latest book. And so it's wonderful to have her along, and I hope you'll join in. By the way, on your blog, Patricia, you've got lots of things going on that blog.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, there are a lot of topics I talk about on the blog. But another thing people can do is go to my website. Just go to patriciamcconnell.com. There's a learning center there that has lots of articles from all kinds of different places and videos on a whole range of topics, from training puppies to dealing with aggressive dogs to book reviews. So it's all free and it's all there. And just jump in if you're interested.
Wonderful. And the website address is, I think we have it up on our Facebook. But
it's patriciamcconnell.com.
There we go.
It's my name.
Yeah, that's your name. Well, let's go to Pat in East Troy, find out what's on Pat's mind. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Larry and Patricia. It's so nice to hear you again. I love the way you imitate doggy voices.
Thank you.
That makes my day. I have a chore that I do willingly. My family lives two houses down from me, and when they're all at work, which is frequently, in fact, all this week, I'm the one who goes to let the dog out for a midday pee.
Mm, okay.
But I've got a problem. I've found that you can lead a dog to drink, but you can't make it pee.
Mm-hmm.
Can't squeeze it out of him, can you?
No.
Oh, my goodness. I sympathize. Sometimes my Cavalier won't urinate, and she can have bladder trouble, so it's really important that she does. Mm. So there have been times I've been standing in the rain. It's like, if I could just squeeze it out of her.
Yeah.
So I sympathize. So tell me a little bit about the dog. How old, male, female? Probably female.
And this one happens to be a male, but I
really
have the same problem with the female.
Really?
You have the same problem with the female?
Uh-huh.
They both won't go?
Well, the female is mine, so that presents different circumstances for when she's out. The male is the one that I have to dog sit
for. Okay. And that's rare because, you know, male dogs are so quick to lift their leg and mark anything. So, is the dog on leash when you take him out?
Yes, he's always on a trolley leash.
So is he normally outside on the same leash when you're...
Yes. And
okay.
You can track his progress by the things that he leaves behind.
Yeah.
Right. So here's what I would try. I would ask your children that when they first get up in the morning to take the dog out, and the dog has to pee, right? Because mm-hmm. it's a mammal. It's spent all night long. So they take him out to potty. They take him out to the place where he tends to want to potty the most. And as he's about to lift his leg, say, go pee, or hurry up. I like hurry up in mm-hmm. Wisconsin in winter. And then as soon as he's done, and I mean the second microsecond he's done, he gets a treat, a really great treat, like a piece of chicken. I mean, literally a piece. And so the dog is like, what just happened? I just do what I do all the time. This is ridiculous. I can't believe my humans are giving me, it's like Christmas in Dogland, because I'm getting chicken for peeing in the morning, which I do every morning. So you're going to start conditioning a behavior in a particular context. So make note of where it is, because that's really important to dogs. It's important to us, too, but we forget that they just have different signals. We're looking for the white ceramic thing, right? You know, they're looking for a scent. They're looking for the right scent. So find out, be sure you know exactly where he generally wants to go, and then have the owners take him out and give him a piece of chicken in the morning. be sure you know not just the cue, but how they say it. So they could say, hurry up, and you say, hurry up, and that's a completely different cue to him, right? So pay attention to what they say and how they say it, and then start trying it. And what I would do is I would go out with the chicken. I would say, hurry up. He might be really distracted, like trying to smell your pockets. Just keep looking up to the sky. Fold your arms like, no. I'm just not paying attention to you. No chicken coming now. And finally, when he gets his nose down on the ground, you can start looking at him out of the corner of your eye to see if he's going to go. And if you get what looks, you know, he raises his leg, even though it's a little late at first, you're going to say go pee sort of after he does it, not before. It's okay. You can start then, say go pee, and then you give him the piece of chicken. And if he doesn't go, which he well might not, you go like no harm, no foul. You take him back inside and you wait 5 minutes. Hopefully you have the time. And you take him out again. So that's what I'd try first. Hmm. And if it doesn't work, then call us back, and Larry will call me, and we'll figure out what's going on.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, Jay in Two Rivers has a question for you, Patricia. Let's go there. Hi, Jay.
Good morning. 1 month ago, my wife came home with a 4-month-old male cat from a local shelter. She thought our 3-year-old border collie needed something to herd.
Yeah.
And while they don't interact a lot, our collie is real interested, but the cat is still getting used to a bigger dog. But they get along great. They'll sit next to each other, and they both like to get up on the couch when we watch TV. But after we had the cat for a few days, it developed a sneeze, and which progressed.
Mm.
In fact, one time I counted 8 consecutive sneezes, which propelled it backwards on the linoleum.
Oh,
my goodness.
And then it developed an occasional deep cough.
Oh, dear.
Like somebody having bronchitis. Well, we took it to the vet for our first free visit, and both they and the animal shelter recommended lysine. So I give our dog brewer's yeast with her dry food, so I thought I'd try some with the cat, who seemed to like it.
And lysine?
Lysine.
Oh, I know what you mean. Okay.
An amino acid.
Right, right. I was first thinking of that. There's a cleaner.
Or do I have the wrong...
No, I
know what you mean. Yeah, okay.
Over the period of a month, it has slowly cleared up. So I don't know if it is developed an allergy to a dander here, or crawling under dusty furniture, or if it had a cold, because it woke me up one morning. I thought my wife was spraying me with a squirt bottle.
Yeah.
There was a cat.
Oh, that's quite an alarm clock.
And it was that wet, and then I got a cold.
Oh, no. Well, let me say a couple of things. One, remember, I'm a PhD zoologist. I'm not a veterinarian, and this sounds very much like a medical issue. But so I'll tell you a little bit about what I can say within reason here is one, what I know about lysine is in part it's an immune system booster. So that might have helped in that sense. I also know that cats are very prone, especially ones who come from shelters or rescue situations or, you know, living outside in a barn. They're very prone to respiratory infections. It's very, very common in cats from that situation. So I'm really glad your kitten is better. So that's fantastic. I doubt, again, not a veterinarian, I think the allergy idea is doubtful, especially since it's gone away, and also since a lot of allergies in dogs and cats present very, very differently. You know, you don't see as much sort of sneezing and red eyes in dogs and cats as you do in people. So I'm glad it's gone. I love that you adopted a cat from the shelter.
Yes.
Yay for you. You know, it's interesting, Larry. Cats are sort of in the situation where dogs are now dogs were in the 50s and 60s, in that in the 50s and 60s, I'm sure that you experienced this. everybody didn't spay and neuter their dog. It wasn't always that common. I woke up in the morning at my house in Tucson or Phoenix, Arizona, and we opened the door and let the dog out. And she went and picked up the collie next door, and they picked up the boxer across the street, and they spent the day in it wandering around the neighborhood. They met us at the school bus, and they had a wonderful life, except when they were hit by cars, and, you know, mm-hmm. it was a whole different world, right? It was a very, very different
very
world.
Very different.
Now, so we have a different cultural expectation for how we treat dogs. And cats are just sort of now moving into that. But we haven't quite shifted around yet. So, you know, people don't restrict the movement of the cats as much. People don't spay and neuter cats as often as they do dogs. And so shelters are overwhelmed with kitties. I speak a lot around the country to shelters all around the country, and it's really common for them to have more cats than they do dogs. Many shelters, including here in Dane County, actually import dogs from other areas because there aren't enough dogs in the area. So it's very common. There's a whole highway of dogs who come up to northern states from the South, from the American South. Cats, no, there's just an infinite number of kitties who needs homes. So thank you for adopting one, because there are millions out there who still need homes.
Yeah. Thank you very much for calling, Jay. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Julie in Minocqua up next. Hi, Julie.
Hi. So I have a question. We have a 16-year-old cat who is very territorial. Mm-hmm. Last year we adopted an English Cocker Spaniel who was 5. Aww. And they've learned to get along together pretty well. But my daughter's going to be bringing home her newly adopted 5-year-old mix, who's pretty small. But the only time our cat gets really upset and attacks is when what we call there is a ruckus going on in the house.
So
our neighbor's dog got in the house, and our two dogs were chasing each other, and she just went ballistic. She jumped on the dogs and was scratching them and bucking them. I tried to separate them, and I got bit in the leg.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, not a good situation. So our dog has learned how to get along with our cat, mm-hmm. but I don't want this poor little traveling from Colorado dog to get attacked for the week that she's here visiting. I was wondering, would it be a good idea to take the cat to the vet and have her be on like a mild sedative for the week?
I love that you're thinking about how to prevent trouble. So, yes. I mean, yay for you, because, you know, so often our response is to be reactive to trouble rather than to prevent it. So yay for you for thinking that way. So what's best for your cat is going to depend on many, many factors. So one possibility, you said it's a 16-year-old cat, a little ornery.
16 years old.
How would she be if she was...
She used to be like that, but she is now.
Well, she's 16, right?
Yeah.
She gets elderly points. So how would she be if she was confined to a room?
Ornery? The good thing is, she's pretty good about staying in our bedroom, but all of a sudden, if she hears that ruckus going on, she'll come charging out of the bedroom and attack.
What if the door was shut?
I could probably do that.
Because that's one alternative that, you know, you know her. You know, nobody knows their animals like their owners, so you know her. So one alternative is how long is the dog going to be staying with you?
A week.
So, that's not too awful, right? So,
no. And, I mean, honestly, she spends probably 75% of the day in our bedroom. She has a little area in the closet she likes to sleep in where it's cozy and dark, and we have food for her in our bedroom and a litter box in our bedroom because she's so old.
Do you have time to try confining her to that area before the dog comes for a day or two just to see what happens?
Yeah, I can do that.
That's what I do.
That's a good idea.
I would try keeping her, but, you know, cats are all about their environment. They're all about their place. Dogs are about their people, and I don't mean that cats aren't very, very bonded to us, but in a big sort of general picture sense, dogs are about people, cats are about place. And so taking a cat to a new place, it's a very good way of preventing trouble, but it's also, if she's 16, it's going to be stressful. So if she can stay in her own home environment, it's probably better for her. So give that a try.
Okay.
Yeah, give that one a try and have a sort of have a plan B out there. But there's nothing wrong with confining. You know, there's nothing wrong with a dog who's coming to visit. You're allowed in these rooms.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also, like, cats has to stay in the bedroom 23 hours a day, but then the dog has to get put away and the cat gets to explore the living room.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So just, you know, they share space, but not at the same time.
Very good. Good luck, Julie, and thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Lynn and Racine, we have you up next. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have an adopted dog also who does not have a problem peeing. We've had him for about a year. He's maybe a 15-pound mix of a poodle and another poodle, I believe. Lovely, great dog, wonderful dog.
Oh, good.
Barks occasionally when somebody comes in, but really sweet dog. Pees in the dining room on the wall when we're gone.
Okay.
So I thought, well, maybe we're leaving him too long. So we tried to kennel him. He hates a kennel. He bloodies himself in a kennel. Mm. Tried to put a gate across to give him a little place of his own. Jumps over the gate. So then I hired a doggy walker to come at lunch. And it's when we're gone. And I know he can hold it.
Okay.
But we will be gone for from the time we leave for work until 11:30 in the morning, he will have peed on the dining room wall.
So he's marking, right? He's not emptying his bladder. Scent marking.
He's marking.
Right. And I have cleaned it with absolutely everything. And no dog has been there before. It's been painted. There was new carpet. I've cleaned it. I've sprayed it with everything. I've resigned myself to the fact that he's going to pee in there and put out pee pads. Well, he won't pee on the. He used to pee on the pee pads. Now he just moves the pee pad and pees on the wall.
Oh,
I shouldn't laugh, but I just have this vision of get this out of here so I can.
Wow.
So I can mark the wall. Well, there's one quick answer, which are those male dog diapers that basically you just put around their butt and their abdomen, and when they urinate, it just soaks into the fabric.
Every day.
So, there there are no small number of people who have, especially, there's something about little male dogs. It's like a Napoleonic complex or something. I have no idea why it's so common in small male dogs, but it really, really is. And so there are lots and lots of people all around the country who just pull their little pee. The pee pads are actually like diapers. You just pull them on. You can get it at any big pet store.
We've used them before on our big dogs when they were at the end of their life. And so I know exactly what you're talking about. But so this is not a behavior that I can change. I think he's nine.
I wouldn't say that. But I would say there is another word besides diapers, but it's not coming to my mind at the moment. So that's the quick solution. So the other things to try. I mean, if you were my client, I'd want to come. I'd want to learn. I'd spend an hour basically interviewing you and doing a questionnaire and working with the dog. But some of the other things you can try are, first of all, it really is critical to try and get that scent out of there. And so you said you've tried everything. One of the problems with everything is there's some detergents and soaps that actually lock in the nitrogen and the ammonia, basically. It becomes an H4 and ammonia. And so there's some things that actually sort of lock the scent in. But so do everything you can to be sure you've neutralized that area as best as you can. Then what you do is you overlay it with other scent. So you start feeding him where he's most likely to go in the dining room. Rather than putting a pee pad there, you put his dinner bowl there. You start sitting in those areas, clean it up really well, right, and dry it. And then you sit down there and you read a magazine or a book while you rub his belly. So you're getting different smells on there. So in other words, you're taking the toilet out of the bathroom and you're putting in a couch and a bed. But you're just doing it with scent rather than objects. Does that make sense?
It does.
So is this going to work with a 9-year-old? I don't know. But that's what I would try first, not knowing anything else.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call in. Patricia McConnell, our guest today, certified applied animal behaviorist. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network as we take a look at celebrating the holidays with your dog and looking at some animal behavior issues with your dog or your cat with Patricia McConnell. Always great to have her come by, and certainly wonderful to have you listening in. And there are lots of callers online. The number is 800-642-1234. Let's turn to Stella in Sturgeon Bay next with a question. Hi, Stella.
Hi. Trisha, I got your book, The Other End of the Leash. We have two kitties. They're 3 years old now. We adopted them when they were kittens from the Humane Society. And they're indoor kitties, strictly. And you talk about, they're very active and they're very intelligent. And I'm trying to figure out ways, I don't know how to train them. They have done some training themselves, basically. We have some toys that we throw and they bring back.
I love it.
They bring back. And I'd like to, one of them will sit up on her hind legs sometimes just on her own.
And great.
I think that we might be able to shape that to
maybe
have her sit up and do a high five or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I don't know how to go about training them.
That's a great question. Absolutely, you can train cats. And you use the same method that works best on dogs or horses or parrots or, for that matter, husbands or children or wives, which is use positive reinforcement. Food works really, really well with kitties very often. So basically, let's just take the sitting up as an example. So you basically want to put that on cue. So you can use a piece of food, a little treat, to lure her in that position. And I want you to create a marker. You say, good, or you get a clicker. Basically something that communicates to the cat what you are doing this microsecond is what's going to get you the treat. Because the treat takes a while to get there, right? And behavior happens in hundredths or tenths of a second. So you want to say, I use good. I used to use clickers. Clickers are great. A lot of people are really good with them. I'm absent-minded. I always forget the clicker. I never can forget my tongue. It's always in my mouth. Thank heavens for that. And I work with one of the literally the country's top animal trainers. It was an amazing seminar with Susan Friedman and Steve Martin in Florida. We got to train macaw parrots, Larry. We had our own macaw for half a day. And we got to train crows. And then we got a half day of lecture. It was phenomenal. Susan Friedman, go to her website. She's amazing. Anyway, Steve Martin can train any species of hawk to do a free-flying performance. Free, right? You open the cage and it flies around and it does what you ask and then it comes back, right? He can train them to do that using nothing but saying good at the right time. So that's what I do. So you're going to lure your little kitty up into a sitting up position and you're going to say good and then give her the treat. And what you're going to start to do, once you're sure you can get that behavior working, then you're going to put it on cue. So you're going to say sit up or look cute or be adorable as she's starting to get in that position, and then wait a little longer and a little longer and a little longer for her to begin to offer it. And even if she goes halfway up on her own, you say, look cute, and she goes halfway up on her own, you're going to say, good, and you're going to give her a treat. And then gradually you ask for more and more and more. You can get cats to run agility courses. You can get cats to do, I taught Sushi to do high fives. That was trivial and easy. So you absolutely can. There are books out there.
Just looking at one online now, The Trainable Cat, it's called.
Fantastic. And Larry, I think you interviewed, didn't you?
Yes,
I interviewed. You told me you interviewed the author of that book, right? Yeah. So go online, find a book for it. It's all about positive reinforcement. And your cats also, you know, they need mental exercise. Most cats don't get, especially indoor cats, they don't get enough mental exercise. They may get enough physical exercise, but they don't get enough mental exercise. And training the tricks is a brilliant way to get them that.
Yeah, and good luck to you. Yeah, I know my own cats, especially Tiger. Tiger just loves to do little mental exercises.
Yeah.
And so it's, and he likes these little greenies.
Oh,
That keep your teeth clean. I think they're a little meatier. They have a little better flavor.
My kitties love greenies. I actually call them the cocaine of cat food, which is probably going to get me sued by the greenies. But yes, my kitties love them. I actually train them to jump onto a particular place on cue whenever I ask them to. Using greenies because they're like willing to work for greenies.
Yes, they definitely, well, Tiger definitely is, sounds like yours are too. And the benefit is that they're getting a little tooth cleaning.
They are, but the one thing I would say is I wouldn't use greenies to train a new behavior because you want to give them like 30 treats in a row.
Oh, yeah, right? You don't want to give them 30
greenies.
So that's
greenies. Way too many. Yeah. So best to cook chicken and cut it up or take little tiny pieces of kibble that's part of their dinner or something. Yeah.
Thanks again, Stella. Appreciate it. Andrea in Spring Valley, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, I was wondering, what are your thoughts on using a muzzle on a reactive border collie when I'm visiting friends who have dogs?
I think in many ways it's brilliant, but I'll add a couple of cautions. And thank you so much for asking, because so often I think trouble and anxiety and injuries can be prevented if people are more comfortable using muzzles. You know, people use muzzles in Europe all the time. Dogs are out and about more, for one thing.
Yeah.
It's a very different culture. It's really fun and interesting. I like it a lot better in that dogs are allowed in parks and they're off leash and they tend to be better behaved. You see way less dog fighting. But people don't hesitate to use a muzzle if they feel they need to. So it's a wonderful way to have you not be worrying about something that's going to happen. It's a wonderful way to prevent trouble. I would condition the dog to the muzzle first, and I would use a basket muzzle. Don't use the kind of a cloth muzzle that the veterinarians use in a clinic. Those are muzzles they're going to use for a brief period of time for a medical procedure. Dogs can't pant with them. So you want to use a basket muzzle where the dog can fully open its mouth and pant. It's the kind that you would see on racing greyhounds. You know, everybody has that image of a racing greyhound. And there's lots of them available. You can find them online. Now, here are the cautions. The cautions are, first of all, dogs can terrify other dogs even without biting them. So, you know, you can get a dog who's a bully and who goes after another dog, stands over it growling, and every time the dog tries to move, the dog on the top growls and threatens it. The dog underneath doesn't know. They don't get the muzzle thing, as best we know. So you have to be really thoughtful about, is this a situation that's really going to help? You know, would we be better to prevent and manage? Or do these dogs generally get along, but there are occasional times where my border collie gets highly aroused or something? Do I have time to ask her what the context is? Because that's what I want to know. Tell me more about what you're worried about.
It's basically what you've described. She gets along generally well. She's a canine good citizen. She goes to training every week.
Super.
She does all the right things, but when there's some activity where another dog is racing around or growling or she's just kind of in a new situation, sometimes she'll just go after the other dog.
Yeah.
And I don't want that to happen anymore because I want to be able to take her places with me. So
Yes, the play police. A lot of herding dogs can fall into that. Sounds like there was a play police cat we talked about earlier. We talked to his owner earlier today. So that is a very reasonable situation to use a muzzle, where there's a situation where you know the dogs are going to be loose together. You need to be able to sort of take your eyes off them. The dogs generally get along. So that's a very reasonable situation. I would condition the dog to be comfortable with the muzzle. Be sure they can't flip it off with their paw. I've seen dogs do that. And at times, my heart sunk and my heart beat out of my chest because I thought I was about to get murdered. So be very sure your dog can get out of it and is comfortable with it and it's safe. At the same time, you have a border collie. The bad thing about border collies is they are easily highly aroused. The good thing about border collies is that they're also extremely trainable and super responsive. So what I would also start doing with this dog is to start teaching it to stop when you ask it to. So you see the signs coming, and I actually have to do this with Willie. Willie has a nickname that I can't actually say on the air because his version of playing is, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to start racing like racehorses. And because I'm really long and have long legs and I'm really fast, I'm going to get ahead of you, and then I'm going to muzzle punch your face and stop you. Isn't that fun? Okay, let's do it again. Okay, let's run, and then I'm going to get ahead of you, and I'm going to smash into you. Was that fun? Okay, and then he doesn't understand. It's like the third time the dog's like, I'm actually not
happy with this.
I'm going to stand here. So this is not uncommon herding dog behavior, right? So with Willie, I can say, Will, and he'll literally like turn around and stop. Or I can say, lie down. Or I can say, So I would start working on your training. Because these are dogs who are bred to listen to you when they're 500 yards away at a dead run chasing prey. And if you can get them to lie down to a quiet lie down, you can get there. So you might want to get a trainer in to help you, but you can get there.
You can get there. And thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Patricia McConnell, our guest today, certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker. She is the author of 10 guides on training and behavior problems. Her books include The Other End of the Leash, For the Love of a Dog, and The Education of Will, a mutual memoir of a woman and her dog. We'll take a quick break for the news, and then we'll be back with Patricia. There will be lots of holiday celebrations in the next couple of months, and today we're taking a look in part at how to keep your dog and you, and maybe your cat and you, stress-free as possible. Larry Mueller here with Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, international speaker, and author. And I know some of you recall the national radio show Calling All Pets that we did together. It was really a lot of fun. And it's great fun to have her back. You may have some questions for her about your own dog or cat. I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. And Patricia, let's go to Jack in Fitchburg next. Jack, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Patricia.
Hi.
So good to hear your voice again.
Thank you.
I have a situation. I have a dog, a female dog, had for quite a long time. But somebody at the shelter talked me into adopting this dog that they have, that they were going to have to put down. It's 18 years old.
Oh.
And that is both blind and deaf.
Oh, my.
And it seems to be, it's kind of driving us goofy because it never seems to stay still.
Mm.
It bumps into things, but it's kind of finding out where things are, but like, it'll walk right over, it'll run into my other dog who might be laying down, and it'll walk right over her. And she's been pretty good. She doesn't growl or anything, but this little dog doesn't seem to go to sleep and just kind of, he's never quiet.
Mm. Yeah. How long have you had the new dog?
Only about 3 weeks.
Okay. A couple of things. One, it can take dogs quite a while to settle in. Usually you do start to see something after the magic threes, you know, three mm-hmm. days, 3 weeks, or 3 months. By 3 weeks, I would think it would start to settle in a little bit better. But it's deaf and blind, and it's in a new place, right? So the fact that it's pacing around makes a lot of sense, because surely it's anxious. You know, it doesn't know where it is. It, you know, doesn't know where anything is. It's completely ripped away from what it knew and understood, and, you know, who knows what kind of background it had. But the other thing that comes to mind is I would talk to your veterinarian about canine cognitive dysfunction. Dogs can get a canine version of dementia. And one of the most common symptoms is pacing, not sleeping. They stop sleeping. They do a lot of pacing. They pace all night. Sometimes they end up sort of getting stuck in a corner with their pathetic little heads just sort of jammed into the corner and standing there for a long period of time. But this pacing is really common. There are medications that can help that. So I would, without question, talk to your veterinarian. Some vets are really comfortable thinking about using medications for behavioral issues, especially related to anxiety. Some veterinarians are not because, there's just so much you can learn in 4 years. Think how much they have to learn. It's ridiculous how much they learn. So there are veterinary behaviorists who specialize in behavior, who know a lot about what kind of medication to use. So if I would... I would talk to my own veterinarian, and I would encourage my vet, if he or she is amenable, and I would hope they would be, to talk to a veterinary behaviorist, because as a certified applied animal behaviorist with a PhD, I would definitely be calling one of my colleagues, although they'd be in the vet field and I'm in the behavior field, to see what they had to say. So that's what I would suggest. I would look at some kind of anxiolytic or that dampens anxiety, or a medication that specifically is targeted towards canine cognitive dysfunction or doggy dementia.
Makes good sense. Good luck, Jack. Appreciate your call very much, and good for you for taking that dog in.
What a sweetie. Oh, my heavens. Yeah, that's really kind of you. And let's hope that you can find a way to give the dog comfort. And if you can't, that's another thing I talked to your veterinarian about. It's been another 2 months. The dog is still miserable. He's 18. He's deaf and he's blind. That might be time to have the conversation of, is it time to give him a good way to pass out of this life into another one?
Mm-hmm. Good luck. Thank you, Jack. Jim in Sun Prairie has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Jim.
Hi to both of you. Thanks for taking my call. This is great timing, as I just made an appointment to have our dog's claws trimmed, which happens to be a very traumatic event for everyone.
Oh, dear.
We first started out giving her a sedative before we get to the vet, and she's still too aware of what's going on. Mm. So every time we have to get her nails trimmed, we have to have her sedated.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, we've gotten to the point where we went and got a trimmer identical to the vet would use, and we would put it by her bowl of food. We did this over a 3 to 4 month period. We'd put it by her food first, and then we'd feed her treats off of it.
Aww.
And then we would touch her paw for a number of days or weeks. And then we'd touch a claw. And she got to the point where we could put pressure on the claw with the clipper. And then we clipped a nail. And then waited a week and clipped another nail. And that was it. And she just will not go near
it. She lost
it.
She's
just lost it.
Wow.
We don't know what else to do other than sedate her. And we're afraid that that's going to affect her health over a long period of time.
Yeah. I do have an idea for you. But first I want to just give you kudos. Yay for you for working so hard and doing the right thing. And everything you did is exactly what you should be doing. And it usually works. It works on most dogs. You're just unfortunate that somehow your dog got like super traumatized. She probably got quicked. We're basically the trimmer went into the quick of the nail. It hurts dogs as much as it hurts us, as best we know. The quick under your nails has a massive amount of nerve endings in it. It's very painful. It's very, very painful to cut into the nail. And I think dogs don't like their paws being held. They're not primates. They're not humans. They don't hold hands. They don't. So that's, they sort of don't like that. I think the click of the trimmer, I've actually had clients, and I had one of my dogs who were averse in some degree to getting their nails trimmed. And then they went deaf in old age. And they didn't mind as much. I really think the click of the trimmer is like, it's like they're training them, click, here, something bad's going to happen. And they're just so entrained to hear that click, and it upsets them, even if it doesn't really actually hurt them. But I do have an idea for you. Have you ever tried a Dremel? Do you know what a Dremel is?
Yeah, and she doesn't like that. I went out and bought one specifically for a dog. And we tried getting her used to that, too, and she won't go near that either.
Yeah. Oh, phooey. That was my great idea for you. Darn. How dare you. So how old is she?
She's 2.5. She's a mixed breed rescue.
And what are we talking? 5 pounds?
We're talking, 40? She's 40 pounds.
Okay.
Mid-sized dog.
And we have any idea who's back in there genetically?
Oh, yes, we do. She's Eskimo, Chihuahua, and Terrier.
Oh, well, that's a combo that's just trouble on wheels right there. Yeehaw!
Boy, oh boy.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. I'll bet she's cute as a button.
She's very smart, and that's the problem.
And, yeah, you know, when people say my dog is smart, I always say, I'm so sorry.
No kidding.
All right. So, well, that was plan B, so let's get rid of plan B. Plan C would be to, well, first of all, keep doing what you're doing. You know, obviously she needs her nails trimmed. But here's, it sounds like you're really into training, which I'm just really impressed with. So here's plan C, and there's actually a video. If you go online, I cannot remember. It might be Kikopup, K-I-K-O-P-U-P. Try that.
Okay.
I think it's her. It's a great series of videos, but it might be her. But if not, just Google training dogs to trim own nails.
Okay.
Basically, you can create a scratching post, and you can train a dog to paw hard enough to start wearing its own nails down.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So go online, find the video. It's not, you know, it's going to take, you're going to have to know something about training a dog, but it's not rocket science, and it's very doable. And if you get the right setup, it's going to have to be what she pulls her nails across is going to have to be really, really sturdy. That's the problem most people have with cat scratching toys. A lot of the commercial ones you buy, they're really wobbly. The cats hate them. That's why they love your couch, because it's so sturdy. They want to be doing it on an oak tree, right? You know, so you need so make it really sturdy so the dog can't sort of flop it over and move it around. But then you basically just, you're going to use shaping. You're going to teach the dog to put their paw on it. It's like a slope, scratchy thing. And then you're going to teach the dog to move the paw down a little bit. And then you're going to keep shaping it so it moves down with more and more force. So that's plan C. I give it a try.
That's a good plan. I like that. Good luck.
Yep.
All right. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate the call. Pearl in Mount Horeb has a different kind of issue, so let's go there. Hi, Pearl.
Hi. Well, about a year ago, a friend of mine was walking along the highway, and out of the grain field came this cat.
Aww.
And the cat was so friendly and everything, so she picked it up and brought it home. But she already had three cats, so she couldn't have a fourth one. So she asked if I would take it, which I volunteered to do.
Aw, sweetie.
And the vet said she's about 4 years old, they think.
Okay.
And so I took her, and she's been a wonderful, wonderful pet, except for every once in a while, she gets the idea to just, leap at me.
Oh.
Twice now I've had to go to the doctor and have shots because she's bitten my hand so badly.
Oh, dear.
And for no reason. She's just sitting in my lap, and she loves to sit in my lap as I watch TV and so on. But she sleeps with me at night, but I don't dare move my fingers or my toes because as soon as there's movement, she's ready to leap. And I know this is from her feral experience.
Of course, sure. Play and cats, predation, right? Play and predation is very similar. So, okay, I'm really glad you called because I don't want you going back to the doctor. I don't want you going to the hospital. And cat bites, as many people know, can be very, very serious. You can get serious infections. I've had clients, I think I've had more clients who ended up in a hospital from a cat bite than a dog bite, even though 93% of my clients were dogs, and I specialize in aggression. So that tells you something. And so I'm guessing you're not 15 years old. And as you know, I'm like almost 69. And I'll tell you, my skin is a lot more thin than it used to be. So this is serious, and I'm glad you're asking about it. So one, I know this is really hard, and you may never forgive me, but I would feel so much better if you didn't sleep. You didn't sleep with a cat in the bed with you because I'm worried you are going to get bitten badly and I don't want you in the hospital. So, oh dear, what do? You find a nice cozy place. You can make it warm, extra cozy and warm for her. Put it far away so you can't hear her yowling for the first couple of nights, and hopefully she'll adjust to that. So when she's sitting on your lap and she's gone after you, have you been petting her? Have you been touching her?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And so here's something that happens often with cats is we don't quite understand it, but there's something about the cat's sensory system where they seem to enjoy petting until they don't. So, and the best explanation I have is, have you ever had somebody like rub your back or rub your arm and it felt really good for a while and then it became irritating?
Yeah.
You know, cats seem to have, they get to that point really easily. And when they get to that point, they're not like, would you please stop petting me? They're like biting. So I would restrict your petting to very brief pet on her head and her chin and her cheeks, not anywhere else on her body, because that's more likely to elicit that kind of bite. So I would pet, and then I would take my hands away and just stop and let her sit there. Be very thoughtful about what you were doing right before it happened, because it's usually predictable. So that's my best advice. And aren't you sweet to bring this kitty?
Yeah.
We want to keep things happy and safe between the two of you.
And I was thinking about one of my own cats, Tiger, and he would do that, but I can't even describe to you what it is, but I know when it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I can see it coming, and then I quit petting.
And good for you. And that's a great point, Larry, about being observant, about changes in just even sometimes the way they're holding their body. Is it relaxed or is it tense? They'll often go still right beforehand. Yeah. So sometimes, you know, they're all sort of noodly and relaxed, and then all of a sudden you can just even sense, right? Is that, you think that's one of
just
the...
Kinda, I,
it's like
all
they
right,
go
I better quit
still,
right now.
Yeah, and so that's another thing is, you know, all of us can learn to be better and better and better observers. When behaviorists get together, one of the things we consistently say is if people were better at observing their pets, aggression or harm from them would be decreased by 90%, because they often tell us when trouble's about to start, but we don't always notice.
Pearl, thank you so much, and good luck. Appreciate your call. Sally in Hobart, your turn. Hi, Sally.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a 5.5-year-old male cockapoo. He's an absolutely perfect dog in every way.
Except.
Yes, there is an exception. I walk him 4 times a day, usually about 0.5 mile at a time. And the last walk, of course, is right before we go to bed.
Okay.
Every single night, he wakes me up about 2.5 hours later and wants to go outside. And he is nothing if not persistent. And so he whines and he kind of grumbles at me. And if I totally ignore him, then he'll come over and put his paw on me repeatedly. And you know, you worry because you think, well, okay, he must really have to go out. And so I take him out. And sometimes it's because he wanted to look at the deer in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he just stands around and looks at the moon. Usually if I leave him there long enough, he pees, and then we go back to bed. Once we do that whole routine, then he sleeps until 8 o'clock in the morning.
Mm.
So I should I just ignore him?
I would.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I am the first to say this is one of these behaviors that's just... There's no elegant solution. You know, we all wish it's like, I can just give you one tip and you can, you know, magically and with perfect ease turn this around. And the fact of the matter is getting a behavior to extinguish usually takes a certain amount of patience and stamina and commitment and earplugs. And so I would... if you had said every time you take him out, he potties, you know, this would be different. But it doesn't sound like that. He's just in a habit. He's just in a habit. And we could all get in habits, and some are good and some are not so good. So one thing we know about changing habits is it takes longer than we want it to. Every single time. They used to say it takes 21 to 28 days to change a human habit. Now they're saying, yeah, it's a lie. It takes 60. But most of us give up somewhere around day 12, which is me too. It's so hard to power through it. So I would ignore it. I really would. And the sort of versions of what you could do is, you know, you can just completely ignore it. Some people would suggest punishing it by, you know, a harsh voice or putting him in a crate or something like that. I would prefer you just try to ignore it for a little bit. You might say something, because we're human, you might say something like, oh, just put a sock in it, give it up, or time to go to sleep. And that is something you could try. You could actually, where does he sleep, by the way? In bed with you?
He starts out in bed with me, and then at some point in the night, I don't know if it's because I'm restless or what, but he goes into his own bed.
Oh, and that's off the bed?
Yeah.
You know what you might do when he wakes you up? Put him back in bed with you.
Okay.
Is just say, no, we're not going out. Let's go to sleep together. Put him in the bed. Give him a little pet. Stroke him in a long, slow, strokey way and say, we're going back to sleep, and then go back to sleep. Now, the downside is now you're teaching him to wake you up 2.5 hours later, so he gets put up in the bed. So you have to decide, is that better? I mean, it's better than having to go outside, right? Especially if you live in Wisconsin in winter. But so you are still teaching him something. So choose between plan A and plan B. Ignore it completely, but you're going to have to do it for quite a while. And or pick him up, put him in bed, tell him nighty-night, and just turn over and go back to sleep. Oh, I want to know what happens.
Oh, me too.
Let us know on the Facebook page for Larry's show or my Facebook page.
You've told me in the past about this that a lot of times they will... It'll go on and on and on, and then there'll be some really aggressive try.
Oh, good for you for thinking about that. Extinction burst, it's called.
Yeah.
Great point, Larry. Yes, it's called an extinction burst. And so it's the equivalent of when you've been waiting for the elevator over and over and over, and it's late, and you're late, and it's not coming, and you finally press the button like, press, like 5 times. Like, that would make it come faster, right? But that's exactly what it is. So it might be that right before it's about to fall apart, you might see this burst of activity where he gets worse than he was before. That would be the time most people would give up. That's the time behaviorists would go like, oh, thank heavens, we're at the end of this road. So great, great thinking, Larry. Good for you for reminding me.
I remember a few things.
Yes, our brains together takes a village, Larry, at our age. Yes.
Oh, man. Thank you so much for calling, Sally. And I want to remind people about your blog and your website and that sort of thing. So tell us about it.
Yeah, thanks. So the website, just Google my name, Patricia McConnell. That'll take you to the website where you can go to my blog. I post every Monday. Mm-hmm. You can get on the feed and it comes out Tuesday. There's a learning center on the... on the website where you can learn all kinds of things, articles, videos, etc. And I'm on Facebook, Patricia McConnell, PhD. I'm on Twitter now, ooh, at McConnell Writes, which has been really fun. And I'm on Instagram. Holy moly.
You're everywhere. <Woo-hoo. laughs> And you're going to be in Mexico City soon. So that's going to be a talk there. Well, that's going to be fun.
Yeah, New York starting Thursday and Mexico in March.
Woo-hoo. Oh, Patricia, I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
It's always fun. Thanks for having me.
Patricia McConnell, certified applied animal behaviorist, our guest, international speaker and author. It's always fun to talk with her. And it's always fun to have you listening in. And thank you so much for your calls and emails. Tomorrow at this time, birds and deer will be on our topics. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.